At Jared, we know devotion isn't a once-a-year occasion. And once the flowers have wilted and the chocolates have disappeared, you'll still want them to know how much you care. Dare to give a gift that lasts this Valentine's Day with our incredible selection of jewelry. From delicate rose gold to bold black diamonds, Jared has hundreds of pieces under $299 and exclusive collections you won't find anywhere else. Shop online or find a store near you at jared.com and dare to be devoted.
Good morning, everybody. It's the day after Lincoln's birthday. Yes, Abe Lincoln was born February 12th. Happy birthday yesterday, a little belated. Today's the 13th of February 2019. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. We have a great show for you today with Michelle Zimmerman, who is an amazing person, and I'm so glad we finally got this show together. She's the what is her official title? I'm going to get this here. Okay, well, she's the leader of the ongoing re-envisioning at Renton Prep Christian School in Renton, Washington, which, by the way, Microsoft selected Renton Prep as the first K-12 Microsoft flagship school in the United States. Wow, I want to learn about that. She's just written a great book on teaching artificial intelligence, AI, okay, exploring new frontiers for learning. And she is learned and wonderful, and it's an ISTE book, and you can get it. Just go to ISTE.org. It's Michelle Zimmerman, Teaching AI, Exploring New Frontiers for Learning. That's what we're going to be talking about. We'll archive the show, education-talkradio.org. Tweet over at EduTalkRadio. Follow us over there. Friend us on Facebook, EduTalk Radio, LinkedIn, EduTalk Larry. And also, please go over, check out our magazine on accessibility, compliance, and equity. That's called AC&E. It's over at ace-ed.org. Brand new issue just up there. It's all online. Check it out. Flip through. You'll have a great time. Michelle has to catch a shuttle in about 25 minutes, so I'm going to get right into the show. Good morning in Washington. Hello there. Where are you? Are you in Washington?
Hi. Michelle? Yes, I am. I'm in Bellevue, Washington. We're headed over to Renton at the Microsoft campus this morning.
You say it again.
Can you hear me?
Because I lost you. Say it again.
I'm in Bellevue, Washington, headed over to the Redmond Microsoft headquarters in just a few minutes.
That's right. And wow, congratulations on what Renton Prep Christian School is doing. We should talk
about that.
But I want to focus on your book today. Okay. I'd like to do another show just about Renton Prep. Okay. Someday.
That'd
we'll
be
talk
great.
About I would love it. All right. And because I really want to get into this with you. And I know we got a slightly shorter time than usual. Okay. Not hurried, just a little shorter. So I just want to make sure we're in good shape. My buddy, Michelle Zimmerman, who is just an incredible person, Dr. Michelle Zimmerman, I might add. Teaching AI, I was going to make a joke called Teaching Al, but I decided not to. Okay, Teaching
That's
AI,
so funny.
Exploring New Frontiers for Learning, that brilliant Dr. Zimmerman. Okay, you better tell everybody, let's start over at the beginning. What exactly is AI? Tell everybody.
That is the question of the century. The definition for AI changes quite a bit as people develop more technology. So that's one reason it's so hard to pin down a specific definition. People will talk about when the invention of the calculator came out and people were able to process these numbers very quickly and they thought, we've arrived.
Yep.
We've developed an artificial intelligence that can replicate the way someone can calculate math problems. But as that became more ubiquitous and people are using calculators daily, people thought, I don't know if that's necessarily replicating intelligence in the same way as a human. So people are starting to shift that definition. And there are several things to keep in mind when you're thinking about artificial intelligence. Number one, there are multiple components people are trying to work on to do the totality of how a human would respond, but having a machine do that. So one of them is looking at machine learning. How can a machine learn from other machines or from huge sets of data? What information can it find really quickly and mine? Another one is looking at the robotic side, how people interact with the world, how we pick things up, how we move, how we get sensory processing information. Can we get machines to do that in the same way that humans can? Then another piece is cognitive systems, how we interact with information around us and process and predict and respond, as well as working in with that machine learning. So there are people who are working in AI since the 1960s and 70s who have said, if we can get those three components together, robotics, machine learning, and cognitive systems, then we can get closer to creating a machine that can respond in a way a human could. There's a man named Alan Turing who came up with something called the Turing test. If a human could interact with a machine and be tricked to think that they're actually interacting with a human, then we've passed the test that we know that this machine can respond in an intelligent way the way a human has. At this point,
the same Alan Turing from the movie a few years ago?
Yes.
Is that the same?
Yes. That's a great
movie. What was the name of that? I can't remember
that.
The name of the movie. The one with
Imitation
Benedict
Game,
Cumberbatch.
Interestingly enough. Yes,
Because
he's trying to imitate. Yes. So that idea of computing coming out there, and can we calculate something quick enough to help solve a problem? And that's basically what people are still trying to do over these years. So what's interesting is, as we think about this as educators, there were a group of professors who thought, well, if we work really hard over a summer in the 1950s, maybe we can solve this problem. But it turned out a lot more complex than we thought. And the more people learn about the human brain, the more we realize there's still left to know. And there are things that we're really good at as humans, or have the capability to do if we work at it, that surpass the ability of a machine. Where a machine would be really good at processing deep information very quickly. A researcher or someone from Google said that the way he describes it as being able to choose one skill to teach a 5 or 6 year old, and they can learn that one skill very well, very quickly, and do it hundreds and thousands of times. And he said that's about the level we are at AI right now. It doesn't do really good at transferring that knowledge over to another domain, but humans have the capacity to transfer learning from one domain to another and see those connections.
So we're going to use, according to what you just said, we're going to use AI, if I may, to process the data, okay? But we're not going to use the AI per se to teach people. That's where there's kind of a drop, okay? It's great for processing the data greater than we can do, I might add. It's certainly greater than I can do. You should see my checkbook, okay? But I'm sure, okay? Okay, but I'm sure that it can process the data, which is key these days for data, because AI is scary. And I can only imagine every teacher is thinking, oh boy, here come the robots taking my class, taking over my class.
They're not going to take your jobs.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, talk about that. Is that fear for real? I mean, I think it might be there, but are people scared of that? Should they be?
Oh, definitely. And as I've been talking to educators from around the world, that's one of the biggest fears. And as I saw people walking by the title of the book, you can see a literal visceral reaction in people's faces, because there's so much in popular culture that there's an association of robotics and AI that it will immediately become a human form and replace that type of job. However, as I was mentioning, there's so much complexity in the way that our brains work that people haven't been able to figure out yet in machines. And for people who've been working since the 70s, they predict at least 100 years to even get close to that point, if at all, because there are so many factors we don't even know, and we may not be asking the right. However, there is validity in saying that there are certain things that machines will be able to replace that traditional education does now. For example, if something is a rote memorization process or directly looking up facts, we know that kids have access to technology and the internet right now, and they can look up a lot of facts right now. And to that end, there's no human at this point who's able to say, I have mastered all subject content knowledge, all new cutting edge research, and being able to be one step ahead of kids. That's not the place we're in anymore. But what it does mean is we need to shift the way that we're working with kids. We need to work with them on how do you find information that's relevant? How do you find information that has multiple perspectives instead of just one lens? Because if machines can find a lot of information quickly, if they're trained to look for only a certain type of information, you may be missing out on a whole other segment of information that could change your perspective on something entirely. And that's where bias comes in. So educators are going to be crucial in that role, yes, for sure.
You know, and that's actually an interesting point. I want to get into that for a second. We input, whether we want to or not, our own biases into the machine. Period, end of discussion. We can't help that.
Yes.
That's part of what it means to be a human, I guess. Unfortunately, we all have biases, okay? We also all have stereotypes, okay, which can lead to untrue expectations, so to speak, that they'll make up one, that the Native American kids aren't as smart as Latino kids or something crazy like that. Okay, we have stereotypes. That's a bad choice, but, you know, I'm just using an example here.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, but what are the, how do we avoid that, okay, to make sure that we're using the a machine properly,
right.
if I may, using the artificial intelligence built into the machine. And the key word there is not intelligence, it's artificial. Okay, so
right.
talk to me. How do we do this?
Yeah, so that's one of the things that was really important to me in this book. I wanted educators to be able to see that this is accessible. You do not have to have a background in coding to jump in and understand what's going on all these dynamics, because it's more than just coding a program or creating a machine to do something for you. There are the ethical considerations, the human components, and one of those is how do you help reduce bias? Bias is something, as you said, that everyone has some element that you're looking from one person. Perspective or one aspect. As educators, if we start teaching kids to specifically seek out perspectives that are different from ours, it'll allow kids and adults to start hearing different ways people think about things and process things. That brings up new questions and considerations when people are developing, not just for technology, but for learning designs. We talk about textbooks that have only one perspective, and that we're teaching generations of kids one particular viewpoint on something, but not giving them the opportunity to look at the counterexamples and counterpoints. Even if you're in a school system that has a pretty homogenous group of students, whatever group that is, try to look for other ways to make calls to other students, things like Skype, that gives you a chance to hear other people think about similar topics. To practice with debates and looking at philosophy and ethics and some of those different components that have been left out of traditional education are really crucial to the way that we're helping form a thought process, not just what to know, but how to think through things. And when kids have more of that foundation, when they get into the workforce and they're confronted with a lot of these different issues, or even if a machine says, hey, we think this is the next predictable step, we should do this. If they're not aware enough to say, have we gotten multiple opinions on this? Do we have a training set of data, a set of data that the machine learns from, that it gets that training from? Is it broad enough to encapsulate a larger population, or is it just looking in one direction? Without those voices speaking up in those sections, in those scenarios, we're missing out on opportunities to do decrease bias. And that comes with training earlier on, and you don't just wait until the workforce and say, hey, now let's try and change the way we think about things and process things. They're very simple activities that are in the book that can start getting kids as early as kindergarten thinking through some of those things, even using movies that kids are familiar with, and the types of questions that you can ask in discussion start getting them in that direction.
And I'm mixed up, but I want to get down to the bottom line here. You can help me do this and help the audience too. When your book, I want to go over the title again. It's an important read, Teaching AI, Exploring New Frontiers for Learning. What's the and it's an ISTE book. What's the bottom line? How does this impact? Just take a typical, I'm going to give you three things, a typical superintendent or a typical teacher. How does what you're saying impact them? And I want them to read your book. And one of the reasons I want them to read your book, besides the fact you're brilliant and there's a good, you know, the stuff in your book is excellent. Okay. What's important is, you know, this is what you subtitled, A New Frontier in Learning. And learning is a science. And we have to move with the times. But we're talking very esoterically here. Okay, just talk about the impact of this on a classroom teacher, on a typical superintendent. What do they need to know, besides philosophically, so to speak, about AI? Yeah, go ahead. Thanks, Michelle.
One thing we know that these technologies are all around us, from our cell phones, are collecting data all the time on our locations, our preferences, things that we're using, video subscription services that are finding our preferences. Those are all collecting data about us. There are points that people can get a very good profile of you without you ever saying, hey, yeah, use all my data. But knowing that these things are around us all the time, they're not going away. And in fact, they're increasing. First, to be aware of that. Second of all, to say our students now, whether they are 5 years old or 13 years old, getting closer to college, are moving into a world where this is their life. And if we cocoon them into an area where they're not being even aware of the implications of these things, we're not preparing them for the type of workforce, the type of community interactions that they will be working with daily. So number one, that's a basic piece of where are we headed in the future, what actually exists right now, and what pieces are hype that we don't need to be as concerned about, but make kids and teachers aware of that are out there. The second is we've celebrated people for generations who are people who've explored, who have gone out to the Wild West and said, I will do whatever it needs to do through the messy spaces, through the cold and harsh winters, through trying to survive because I want to help develop society in a certain way. That alone can bring in a lot of different debates about who took over whose land or who introduced different kinds of diseases. And yes, that whole space is messy. But there are other things that we're looking at that are new frontiers, whether it's space or the oceans, areas of that that have not been explored. The technology is one of those, and that's relevant and right here, right now, right all around us. Law enforcement is starting to use things in different countries that are doing facial recognition, that are capturing your image and being able to identify things. That can be beneficial to help stop crime in certain areas, but in other areas, what happens if you're falsely accused of something? What happens for legal implications that are surrounding any of that? And going down to a classroom level, there's cyberbullying. We know that exists. We know bullying has existed before technology was proliferating in school.
It sure has.
And so we know that some of these components can influence or even exacerbate those. So if we're not aware of the tools that exist, the things that are surrounding us as humans, there can be behaviors that start to emerge in the classroom, and as educators and leadership, you're going, where is this coming from? I've tried everything. I don't know how to work with this anymore. It could be something that's coming from outside the walls of the classroom, and if you're not aware of those components of technology with the way that people are interacting different, it could change and alter the ability for you to effectively teach your students at a most basic level. So at that level, even knowing just generally what exists out there, what's an important part of humanity, what do we want to still hold on to? Because tradition and values are still incredibly important. We don't want to throw those away in favor of bringing technology in the forefront. And there are examples from schools around the world who are doing a beautiful job of that. For example, in Japan, in Kyoto, there's a school that still teaches kids the way of tea, the tea ceremony, and they even build their own tea bowls. Construct those with pottery. And they realize that this practice is helping kids realize that interacting with another human in that moment can never be replicated. But across the hall, they're still working with robotics. So they're not giving up tradition and some of these very human connection pieces in favor of bringing forward in technology, but they're not also saying, well, let's not brave this new frontier of technology because we need to hold on to tradition. It's possible to merge those two things together, and there are examples throughout the book of what that can mean for us as people and how you can have human-computer interactions in very effective ways.
It's a little, I got to tell you, you know, when you put it in those words, it's always a little scary, and we're right immersed in this. I mean, one of the things that drives me crazy, if I just may go on about this, is Alexa, the Google thing. Okay, I always feel I feel like it's spying on me. Like it's this thing in my living room, and it's like my own little butler. All right, and I'm telling it what to do, and it does it, so to speak. All right, and but could it be spying on me? Yeah. And my point of that is, all these things are around us, and we kind of take them for granted. We got to learn to use them so it doesn't wind up like the movie Terminator 3, speaking of movies, where the machines take over. You know, give me an example if you can. I got two questions for you here. Give me an example, first question, of how you're applying this, okay, to your Microsoft flagship school, first in the USA, where you work, Renton Christian School, which I say again must be a wonderful school in Renton, Washington. You work there, obviously. It's wonderful. Okay. Yeah. And I'm sure everybody else is. But, you know, are you, as you look at all this, are you applying? Obviously, you are. So give us an example of what you've learned to what's going on in Renton. Give people a concrete example there.
Okay. So one of the examples is there's a tool that's called Sway. It's free for educators, and what it does is it has machine learning running behind it so that it can help design the presentation. You may have used PowerPoint or other types of slide decks with your students before and realized how much of a struggle that can be, not only to make it look aesthetic at the end, but try and figure out how to guide kids through a design process to help communicate their ideas. Sway helps optimize the types of images you use or the searches that you choose, whatever that topic is, for several different things. One, it does a search on the internet for things that are already Creative Commons licensed, and we know we want to teach kids about digital citizenship and how to really effectively cite other people's work. So if you're using Creative Commons license, you have free access to be able to use and reproduce this type of work. Having that search already built into it for students is incredibly beneficial, and for teachers also. even if you're starting within Sway, you can start by typing a topic, and then it brings up a lot of information for you that you can start building new content areas. We know that having kids start to create knowledge as opposed to just repeat knowledge is going to be a really crucial skill as they're moving forward in the future. So this tool is very simple. You can imagine it like note cards. If you were teaching kids to write a research paper and they write different sections on each note card and they have the ability to rework it, move it across the floor. But imagine these as digital note cards where you can drop on a website. You can drop audio recording of student voices. You can drop in images. Variety of different tools that are available in that, and all you need to do is hit play, and it creates a very beautifully designed, looks like a website. And you can share it with one link, and it's mobile-enabled, so you can share it with parents, and they can see it on mobile devices.
Wow.
You can put it in newsletters. And what's beautiful about it is you're focusing on the content and what's important to you in terms of the creation. It's open and free to be able to adapt it, to change the designs. But you don't have to spend a lot of energy on making that design look beautiful. And that's where machine learning has taken the weight of some of that and then given you design features already to optimize animations without it looking like Flash all over the place. And we know kids as young as 4 and 5 are able to even do this on their own with dragging and dropping on tablets. It works for iPhones. It works for iPads, PCs, anything with internet connection, all the way up through high school and college students with more sophistication. So that's a really concrete example of a tool that exists that's free, that can be usable anytime by someone, all the way up to using something like McGraw-Hill has a math program called ALEKS, A-L-E-K-S, and it has adaptive based on AI of adaptive learning for students in mathematics. And it helps kids to be able to progress and find the gap struggling with in math and what needs to be filled in, helps to alert the teacher so they can personally work with the student. So that's the human component of it. But as a teacher in a math class, there's no way you can keep on top of every variation or every gap that the student has from previous years and be able to keep moving kids at a differentiated level efficiently without completely burning out. I've tried. I know how difficult that is.
Yes.
But to have a tool like this,
yes.
have a tool like
it's
this
amazing.
That's supported by AI can really help.
It's amazing.
And
by the way, thanks for mentioning McGraw-Hill, which brings up interesting. I work with McGraw-Hill on our magazine, which is Accessibility, Compliance, and Equity in Education.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, and they help me, and I'm glad you mentioned that, the ALEKS tool. And I'm going to let them know that you mentioned that, too, so they can build you a statue somewhere. We have just a couple of minutes left, but I want to get into this because this is exactly what you were just talking about. You know, with a tool like McGraw-Hill's, ALEKS, and just with AI in general, you mentioned this to me as we were planning the show, that it really helps, quote, underrepresented student voices. And that to me just is a simple way of saying equity for all kids, no matter where they stand on whatever spectrum we're talking about here, the education spectrum. Is that what you mean? That AI allows a teacher it helps the teacher to create the right lessons for the right kids at the right time, and not just McGraw-Hill's product, but all the products.
Right.
Right.
It
Am
definitely
right?
has that potential. Absolutely. And it depends on an educator having an openness to be willing to try and to really say, how can I maintain this really solid human connection with my students? There's a tendency I've noticed with teachers to feel like if there's AI behind it, then that removes their connection with the students, or you set the students behind this brilliant piece of technology and let it go. But that really shouldn't happen that way. It should definitely be the technology supporting you as an educator to know where they are, so you know how to intervene quickly or how to help them move faster if they're ready to go. We've had students who have actually gone through 2 and 3 ALEKS McGraw-Hill courses, math courses in 1 year, where they would traditionally be set in one classroom and be bored out of their minds waiting to move forward in math. And now they have the ability to not only demonstrate that they've learned something solidly, but keep moving forward. And that allows you to help differentiate that learning. Or for kids who need more support, you may not realize that if you're teaching a basic lesson and you look across the crowd of students, you can see heads nodding and you can see a test that's an 80%, but not realize that there's a conceptual gap. Something like this will help you identify that they may be missing concepts in whole numbers or in ratios and percentages that they may have missed from earlier on in 3rd or 4th grade, and to help level that playing field and help kids know that it's not because you can't do math. It's because you just have a gap in this area. And once we fill it, then it'll make it so much easier for you to progress forward.
It's really so true. And let me just say, so the AI, which is, this is very important to me, is going to help bring about equity, which every school district, every teacher, every superintendent wants. If we learn to use it right and not be scared of it.
And you look at the other types of tools, there are ones to help support dyslexia and reading. Those are in OneNote and learning tools. All those accessibility features for languages. If you've got children who are speaking in a different language at home than they are at school, to help that kind of support between home and family and school connections, but also to help support the reading for whether it's instructions, websites, and pages, all built into that. Those are all natural language processing, and those are a component of artificial intelligence as well.
Right. It's just amazing. I know you have to go. Do you want to continue this conversation? We can do another show in a few weeks.
Sure. That would be wonderful.
I'm going to get back to you on this, and I'm also going to ask you if you can help us out by writing an article about this in our magazine. Would you like to do that?
Of course. Yeah, I would.
I would love that. I would love that, Dr. Z. All right. Now go catch your shuttle bus for the meeting.
Okay.
We're right on
time. Thanks so much.
Okay. Just go running out the door, and you'll hear from me later today. Thanks, Michelle.
Bye. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. Bye. Michelle does have to go and run and catch a shuttle bus to her big meeting and presentation today. Okay. She let me know that ahead of time. This is key stuff. We're going to continue it. It's called, the book is from ISTE. It's called Teaching AI. And you have to know this as an educator. You're a scientist. You have to know where we are and the place in this world. You know that. Teaching AI, Exploring New Frontiers for Learning, Dr. Michelle Zimmerman. Okay. And again, an ISTE book, Teaching AI. It's really fascinating stuff. What can I tell you? All right. Wow. And like I said, every school district wants equity. Use what we have to bring that about, and this is one of the tools, okay? And, well, pretty cool stuff, I got to tell you. All right, we're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org. We're going to tweet it out over at EduTalk Radio, okay? Please check out our magazine, AC&E, Accessibility, Compliance, and Equity in Education at ace-ed.org. Next issue, the new issue is up there right now. It's only a week old, and it's up there right now. But the next issue will have an article, I hope, from Michelle. All right, I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening. Have a good day. Thanks, Michelle.
At Jared, we know devotion isn't a once-a-year occasion. And once the flowers have wilted and the chocolates have disappeared, you'll still want them to know how much you care. Dare to give a gift that lasts this Valentine's Day with our incredible selection of jewelry. From delicate rose gold to bold black diamonds, Jared has hundreds of pieces under $299 and exclusive collections you won't find anywhere else. Shop online or find a store near you at jared.com and dare to be devoted. At Jared, we know devotion isn't a once-a-year occasion. And once the flowers have wilted and the chocolates have disappeared, you'll still want them to know how much you care. Dare to give a gift that lasts this Valentine's Day with our incredible selection of jewelry. From delicate rose gold to bold black diamonds, Jared has hundreds of pieces under $299 and exclusive collections you won't find anywhere else. Shop online or find a store near you at jared.com and dare to be devoted.